0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Stephanie Carroll, good afternoon.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for taking the call.
And thanks for making the call. And it's an awful situation that you're in and your daughter Rachel is in. Your daughter is... Yes. Tell us the situation.
Rachel, she's 23 years of age. She has Down syndrome. The last 2 years, Rachel has... She's got very bad, in her mental state, more than anything. And it's turned physical.
Right.
She can't do anything for herself anymore. Rachel used to do everything for herself. Mm-hmm. She used to love cycling, walking. She done everything. She loved getting in the shower, doing her hair, makeup. Okay. And she just went to down to doing absolutely nothing for herself.
So she
needs help in every way.
Okay. And she used to be quite independent. So what has happened to Rachel, Stephanie?
It would have been, Rachel was 15 years of age and a person that lived in the estate sexually assaulted Rachel. So she was all right for 2 years after that, and 2 years later she started having a little episode. She thought somebody was watching her all the time, and pulling curtains. She was hiding. And I went to the doctor to ask the doctor, is there any way that she could take anything to relax her? And she said that she'd have to see a psychiatrist for anything like that. So I was pulled forward for Newcastle Hospital.
In County Wicklow.
So they seen her and she was put on an antipsychotic.
Okay.
So she was on that antipsychotic for a while and I noticed then she was having a few side effects like tremors and... Mm-hmm. So they put her on other medication then, and she just didn't get any better.
Right.
Things went from bad to worse. I don't know. I've no words for it anymore, to be honest with you.
That sounds horrific. And how can you describe Rachel's situation today, Stephanie? How is she physically?
She's physically, she can't do nothing. She can't dress herself. She's actually crawling floors. She crawls up the stairs. When she reaches the top of the stairs, she has to crawl to the bathroom, to the bedroom.
Oh my God.
Her head is buried constantly in between her chest. She's very bad.
Is she verbal? Does she talk?
Yeah, she's verbal. She'll talk. Okay. She'll have her good days. Yeah.
What would she say to you on her good days?
On her good days, she's wanting me maybe to put some music on the telly so she can listen to us. She hasn't opened her eyes since October. She lost eye contact last summer where she wouldn't look at us. And in October, she closed her eyes and she hasn't opened them since.
And is that a medical condition or... A psychological condition.
I've seen a neurologist where they've done brain scans, they've done bone scans, everything came back clear. The neurologist reckons that there could be some form of secondary dystonia.
Yeah.
He's given her Botox twice to try and make her eyes maybe open, clench so tight. Loosen them up or relax them, but...
And you know her so well, Stephanie. You've reared her and it's been a challenging job. But, Stephanie, what do you think? Do you think she's forcing her eyes closed or it's she can't help it?
I don't think she can help it. I think they are forced. I think there's something going on with her mental health big time. She just won't open them. It's like they're clenched closed.
So, treatment at the moment.
That's why I'm trying to get help. I'm trying to see, is there anybody out there that knows what to do or how to help her in some way to try and maybe get a bit of mobility back? And I'm at a loss.
Stephanie, has anyone put a name on Rachel's condition?
No, nothing. Nothing.
And do they connect it? And I know a man was sentenced to 6 years for the sexual assault.
He was only sentenced to 3 years.
Oh, 3 years. Okay. Yeah, okay. Do any medics or psychologists related to that horror, to that assault?
No. I tell you, when that happened to Rachel, Rachel had no help at all. No one ever seen her. It was like it didn't happen. It was like she slipped through the cracks. It didn't happen to her. And to me, it felt, because of Rachel has special needs, it was like she was just left there. If that was me or you that happened to, we would have got all the help we needed. And same in this situation.
But our rape crisis centres around the country have such a brilliant reputation, rightly
yeah,
so.
I do remember them saying because of her special needs that it would be very hard to get somebody to help her in that way. But nothing ever came. Nothing. No help.
And when you even in your description here this afternoon, Stephanie, it's heartbreaking. You'd want to have it's heartbreaking. So when you explain that to medics or social workers or psychologists, psychiatrists, politicians or whatever, what reaction do you get? Surely people would reach out to you.
I tell you, no, a lot of people haven't seen Rachel a long time. No one has seen her. She doesn't go anywhere. So no one actually knew how bad. The only people that knew how bad she got, I suppose, was the hospital, her place of work and the doctors of Newcastle. But nothing has come. There's no plan. There's no plan in action. I've had meetings and, like you said, that in the next meeting they might have they probably have a plan, but the plan has never came. So
you're at your wit's end. Well, you shouldn't be asked this question either, Steph, but what do you think would help Rachel?
I think if there was somewhere for Rachel to go, say, like, in like a 9 to 5 or something, some kind of a program, intense program, that somebody could help in some way to get her going again, to get her out of this whatever she's in. I can't seem to get her out whatever she's gone into. It's like she's gone into a cave and I just cannot get her back out.
And that whole thing that where you say her head is in her chest and she goes around on her hands and knees, which means
her breathing is terrible from it.
But I also presume if she goes around her hands and knees, her head is in the chest, that this is an image I have of somebody whose head is rubbing off the carpet all the time or off the floor.
Yeah, no, she actually has marks on her forehead. The carpet on the landing because she's dragging herself. I brought her to see a doctor today and it was 2 flights of stairs and I could barely get her up the stairs.
Yeah. And has she still got a job?
I actually last week took her out of the job for the time being because it's so stressful to try and get her in. I hate leaving her in there. The girls in work are very stressed themselves. Because they know that is not the Rachel that they've had all this time.
Okay.
She goes into work, she'll vomit on herself, she'll soil herself.
The poor woman.
To get back home, it's like she just cannot cope being around people.
So you're looking for help. Anyone out there that can guide you?
Anybody that has seen anything or
helped
anyone?
How are you?
To be honest with you, I'm not very good.
How are you managing?
It's so stressful.
Yeah.
I'm just so heartbroken. My heart's actually broke.
Yeah.
All our hearts are broke. We just don't know how to help her.
Yeah.
And nobody will tell us how to help her or tell us the right place to go.
Okay.
That's the whole thing. Like we just don't know what to do.
And if you want anyone to help you, Stephanie,
no,
in terms of
only
family.
Us as a family.
Yeah.
Like us here, like.
Yeah.
We're trying to help her.
Well, you're doing great. You love her deeply, obviously.
Yeah.
And you're doing incredible work, even being able to do this phone call.
Yeah. At the end of the day, Rachel is a human being.
Yeah.
She has feelings. She needs help.
Yeah.
If that was us, anybody would do, we'd get the help.
Okay.
So there has to be somebody that can help her. You know what I mean? Like, okay. And there has to be somebody somewhere.
And that's your plea. That's your plea.
Yeah, that's my plea.
Stephanie, please. Thanks. Stephanie, Carol, please mind yourself. I know your life is devoted to minding Rachel. Mind yourself as well. You're doing incredible work. And I'm very conscious. It's 24/7.
Yeah,
it's 365, Okay, we put it out there and see can anyone help, Stephanie.
Right,
mind yourself.
And
kind regards to you, Stephanie, and to Rachel and your family. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 is the text number.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Derek Leonard. Derek, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
What happened?
Well, basically, I was driving in November 21. I was driving from Mullingar up to see my father, who I'm a carer for. And I was just coming into Kinnegad, 30 seconds from a petrol station. And a man pulled me in. And when I stopped my car, it went up in a blaze. It was on fire. I didn't realise it was on fire. I was driving it. And I was just about to pull into a petrol station. I drive a well-known make of a car. Mm-hmm. And you've told me I can't mention the make of the car.
Well, I haven't, but anyway.
Yeah, okay.
Every car. No, that would have been our legal advice. But every car is well known at this stage. Just tell us what happened.
Yeah, so basically, I said I was driving from Mullingar to Broadford, and the car went on fire, went in flames, and I suppose I was lucky to get out. Somebody had pulled me in, and I had two dogs in the back of the car. I got them out, and the car was not left of the car. And the same thing happened today to somebody on the M4 near Maynooth. Anybody who had been travelling Dublin this morning would have seen a white car on fire. It's a well-known brand. And
is it the same brand? Is the same brand as your car?
It's the exact same brand as my car. I sent you two videos. One of the car this morning.
Now, car fires are pretty regular, unfortunately, because of petrol and electrics and the ignition, and you have all the ingredients there. For a fire, unfortunately.
This particular car, there have been cases brought highlight in 2018. I did contact the manufacturer, and to no avail. They just drag you on until your car is disposed of, and then they tell you to come out and look at it. But at that stage, your car is disposed of.
What about your insurance?
Well, your insurance will cover you, but they won't cover you for your contents. You know?
And what were your contents?
Well, Joe, I was, I had a few pound in contents, let's put it that way. But
now, the main thing about a car fire is get out and stay out.
Correct. But the problem I want to highlight is that when your car goes on fire, you get in your car and you drive off.
Yes.
A lot of people, the same as me, all your doors are automatically locked.
Okay.
Right. So say you've got kids in the back. I had two dogs in the back of the car.
Okay.
So basically, my door, when I stop the car, will open. But when I try to get to the passenger's door of the car at the back, I could not get it open. Because the car is on fire and your electric go on fire. So I suppose I really want to point out to people who have young kids in the back of a car and their doors automatically lock.
So how can you, but how can you override that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, if that's the manufacturer of this particular brand, I mean, if you jump out the front of the car and you can't open the passenger's door or the back doors from the outside of the car.
So how did you get your dogs out?
I went to the boot and I got the boot open. This particular brand of car, you wave your foot underneath the back bumper and the boot pops up.
Oh, very good. That was good. That was quick thinking.
Well,
even though firefighters would tell you, get out and stay out. Don't, like the petrol tank, if you see firefighters tackling a car fire, they have to wear breathing apparatus because the toxic fumes from car fires are so dangerous. So you did rescue your dogs?
I did rescue my dogs, yeah. But
were you ever in doubt that you could rescue them?
Oh, look, I mean, the difference between your dogs, it's the same as, you know, they're like kids to some people. I mean, I got them out. I mean, I was going back to get them out no matter how I had to get them out, you know.
Okay, so you had no doubt that you should have rescued them?
Oh, no, sure, I have to rescue my dogs.
Okay.
You know, I bought the dogs for my two daughters. So, I mean, you're going to go home and tell your kids suddenly gone.
I am being glib, but they weren't your two daughters. I'm thinking of your safety.
Well, I suppose I'm pointing it out that they could have been two kids.
No, but they weren't, Derek. Well, fair play to you. How were you afterwards?
Oh, Chuck, I was shaking. I mean, like I said, I'd made numerous emails to this company.
No, but I mean, after the fire, did you eat smoke? Did you inhale any of the fumes?
I mean, no, I wouldn't say that. I mean, it's more shock than anything else. I mean, my biggest problem would have been if I pulled into the petrol station, it was 30 seconds away from me, and I pulled in there to get fuel, get some groceries for my mother and father, that the whole car, I would have put the whole petrol station on fire in Kinnegad.
Yeah.
You know, the whole petrol plaza. I was 30 seconds in the plaza.
Oh, God.
And I mean, with this particular brand of car, I mean, this has been pointed out. All you do is Google cars that go on fire, and this brand will come straight up every time. And there's nothing been done about it. I've never been contacted, only silly emails over and back from them. They've actually no contact that's worth talking about. You know, just kept fobbing me off.
And are you out of pocket?
Of course you're out of pocket, Joe. I mean, I had a laptop in the car, I had runners, I had different things, so I do a bit of running.
I
had different things in the car. That your content in the car, which most people probably don't know, is only €300 or €400.
Okay.
If you get your car insured, ask the company how much is my content covered in the car. Mine was €400. I mean, you don't get much of a laptop nowadays for €400.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, I had a pair of binoculars in as well. But look, I got out of the car, I got the dogs out of the car. But I mean, the real thing I'm trying to point out here without... I can't name the brand of car is that the same thing happened today on the M4. Anybody going to Dublin would have seen a white car on fire near Maynooth. And it's the same thing. The car takes fire on the front and it travels right back to the back of the car.
But you know, but you see, one of the lads upstairs just did what you said. What cars are catching fire?
Well, look,
your car didn't come up, but what did come up apparently is 6.5 million cars catch fire every year in the world. 6.5 million.
When are the manufacturers going to put their hand up and say, we are wrong, that they need to sort it out? It's very same as these locks in the cars. Like, you should be able to override. There should be an override button that you can hit them. Like, I hit my override button trying to open the back doors, and the door of the car would not open. It wouldn't do anything.
Yeah, that's obviously the
electrics is on fire.
That's the reading, really worrying.
Yeah, so I mean, I would point out to people, look, have a think about, I know you don't want your kids opening the car from the inside, but I would be pointing it out to, you know, just have a think about it before you do your settings on your computer for your car.
Did you have a fire extinguisher?
So, like 99.9% of the people, you don't have them in the car. I mean, a guy did pull in with a van with two fire extinguishers, waste time.
Yeah, I understand.
You know, I'd thrown a cup of water and fire. The lads ran out of the paths in Kinnegad. I have to thank them. They came out with fire extinguishers again. It was pintless.
Yeah.
You know? So that's how it is.
Did you take photographs of the car this morning, Derek?
The car this morning, no. Somebody else has sent it to me and says, there goes another such and such car on fire.
Okay.
You know? Before I go, George, I want to get a small plug in, if that's okay.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Along with some other people, we're reopening a bar and restaurant on the N4. It used to be called the Fox's Covers. Many people would know it. It's just outside Mullingar. It is reopening in a couple of weeks. So anybody passing by for tea or coffee, call in.
Okay, fair play to you. And why did it close?
It's closed. It hasn't been open in about 8 years.
It's great that you're opening a hospitality business. Fair play to you, Derek. And I hope it's called the Fox's Cover.
It used to be called the Fox's Cover, and it's now going to be called the Covered Tavern.
The Covered Tavern. Okay.
We've got, you know, there's a few bedrooms there as well. We've got loads of parking space, and anybody calls in with the kids in the first week or two, we get free ice cream.
Okay, Derek, good, you mind yourself, Bye. Derek. Okay, Tony Philpott, back to cars. And the story yesterday, and we put up the video, and we'll do it again, of the cars in Long Lane off Camden Street in Dublin. Just the two boys, 3 o'clock in the morning, just perambulating along, arm in arm, like Chaz and Dave. And then they just start between the two of them, and they have a little system for knocking the electric mirrors off cars. Not just turning them, but knocking them completely onto the... and the damage that caused. Now, one theory was that it's from the late night drinking in the Camden Quarter, as it's now called. Tony Philpott, good afternoon. You live in Long Lane and you have a different theory.
Yeah, I do live in Long Lane, Joe. Thanks for having me on. Yeah. I doubt very, very much it's from the drinkers in the Camden Quarter, because I've seen them and I followed them to where they live on two occasions. And they, it's the route they take doesn't come from Camden. Right, it comes from Haddington Row, so they're not coming directly from Camden. They're, I would put them maybe 20s. It's usually the same group, maybe 20s, maybe 30s. Hoodies, scarves over their noses, and they just go up kicking mirrors all along. Now, I followed them on one night about a year ago, and one of them spotted me following them and then said, we know where you live. And I stopped. Mm-hmm. So I went back home. The following day, every single potted plant in the front of our house was smashed to smithereens in broad daylight.
And you were following them, Tony, with what intent?
To see where they were going. And I did see where they were going. So, but I stopped. I'm not that stupid and I'm not a young man. So I let that go. On another occasion, I followed a young man who I had seen on a Sunday morning in broad daylight elbowing windows as he walked along trying to smash them. So I followed him as well, and he turned around and saw me, and he just laughed, right, and said something I can't actually remember. It was like, go away, you posh effer. Right?
Okay.
That was it. There's been dog poo smeared on car door handles, smeared on windscreens. When, I guess about last year, there was a rampage where they smashed and stomped on every hood of every car and smashed every windshield. Surprisingly, not mine, but they got everybody else. And then later on that night, they came back and smashed the rear window on two or three cars after that. And then before that, before all of that, I know, Joe, this is going to sound ridiculous, but someone set off a car bomb that blew out windows on half of the street. A man who was setting it off, the police know this, they're aware of it, the man was setting it off, it went off prematurely and it nearly killed him. Every alarm, house alarm went off on the street. I ran out. It was about 1 a.m. in the morning.
What do you mean, a car bomb?
A car bomb. There was a guy setting a car bomb in a car at about three houses down. I don't know if you're familiar with what Long Lane.
I am, of course. I love it. Yeah. But you say that, I don't want any more information. But was he targeting a car?
Yeah, he was targeting a car. He was blowing somebody up. He wanted to kill him. I mean, the police were there. The army were there. The following, in fact, the army were there within hours looking for other explosives. I mean, I actually had the windscreen of the car on the roof of my house. So it was a pretty bad explosion. So lucky the guy wasn't killed.
How many cars were damaged?
I believe just that one and the one behind it was damaged by the flames from that one. And
did you ever hear what the ingredients of the car bomb were? Like, it was a serious IED.
Oh, no, this was a bomb. This was a serious, serious gelignite pipe bomb.
Meant to kill somebody.
Oh, totally meant to kill someone. It blew the car to smithereens. Parts of it were in the Meath Hospital across the way. Lots of it were up the street. I mean, it was when it went off, there was a hail of particles that came down on my roof with as well as the windscreen. It's not funny, I know.
And was there anyone injured?
Yeah, the guy who was planting it was injured. He ran past me as I came out the door, and he was streaming blood from his face. And it splattered on all the cars that were parked all the way up. And I believe he got into a taxi and got to a hospital, and there he was arrested.
Okay. Yeah. So a car bomb went off in Long Lane. I never heard about that.
Yeah.
But you say you followed some of these guys, and what's your theory? You think they're locals?
Oh, they're absolutely local. Absolutely local.
But how do you know that, Tony?
Because I followed them to their houses.
To their hall door?
To their hall door. The, what you call it, there's flats behind me, and there's a little enclave of public housing down at the end of the lane, and that's where they go. And if you give any kind of pursuit, that's where they go in, and they just sort of disappear.
But that doesn't mean they live there, though.
Not necessarily, but I've seen them coming in and out when they weren't doing anything, you know.
Okay. Gardaí, like, CCTV, we've got the CCTVs from yesterday.
Yeah, the Gardaí are, look, you know, I don't expect 24-hour Garda presence on the street, not by any means, it's not going to happen. But in the 10 years we've been living here, my wife and I, we've never seen a policeman on Long Lane, ever, day or night. And any reports that we made...
You must have seen a guard car.
Never seen a patrol. Never, ever, Joe. I mean, okay, fine, I'm not outside in the street all the time. Well, there may well have been a guard car going by from time to time. Or a guard on foot, right? But never. And it's any time we've reported it, we get a sympathetic reception from the sergeant in charge of community affairs down there. He's a great guy. Terrible.
By the way, when you go, I know different cars have different, especially with electrics now, to replace a mirror can be expensive, depending how.
€600.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
€600.
So it's not a matter anymore of when your glass was broken and I used to run into Regency Glass there in Fairview. Yeah. It's a great shop, and they just give me a little fitting. The little mirror to slip back in.
Or next to
that's gone, that type of... Well, it's an electric mirror, isn't it?
Yeah, it is an electric mirror. But also, the mirrors don't break. They just, they come out of their housing, the wires get torn, they fall on the ground. Yeah. And you're into having to buy a new mirror and then getting a motor electrician to fit it back in.
Yeah.
I guess the question for me, and I know every resident on the street has sort of gone to Dublin Corporation, to Ivana Bacic, to local representatives, all of whom promised to look into the matter. But fundamentally, the matter could only be resolved if they're deterred in some way. And that deterrent should come from the police.
Okay. Are you the Tony Philpott, the writer?
Yes.
Oh, good man. So how are you keeping?
Well, I'm keeping very well, Joe, and yourself. Thanks very much for that lovely review you gave me all those...
God, that was years ago.
God, it feels like it, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, but how are you doing? Well, you were into film and you're into book and you're into... wrote a book about religion, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Faithless, a journey out of religion with stops for light refreshment along the way.
Okay.
Sold well.
Annoyed
a lot of people. But this situation is, look, you'd love to say, you know, it's tolerable. And it kind of was tolerable. It's half the price you pay for living downtown. Broken mirror. Yeah, sure. But this is wanton and persistent vandalism that's targeted. And that's the difference. And that's what frightens me. And when someone smiles back at you and says, "I know where you live," that's a little bit of a shiver.
And Tony, my memory of you as well is, I know it's a few years, but you used to wear a very distinctive hat, isn't that correct?
I still do.
You still do. So you are easily identified. I love people who wear distinctive hats. But you are very developed. Okay. Yeah, okay, well, let's hope the guards are listening, Tony, and stay safe keep writing. It's a great craft, a great skill, and you're very good at it. That's Tony Philpott in Long Lane in Dublin. Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Talking about Tony Philpott there in the book you wrote about religion. What am I seeing posters at the minute around Dublin for a new movie called The Way of Mary? Or someone help me here. I'm just wondering, is it a story of Mary? Is it a story of Mary Magdalene or whatever? Is it a religious movement as such? And does it have appeal to people? I think it's called The Way of Mary. I see the big posters in my head here. Anyway, okay, Karen Keady, back to the rebranding of the NCBI, the National Council for the Blind in Ireland. As we heard for the first time the other day here on Liveline, they're changing their name to Sight Ireland. Karen, one, what's your situation and what do you think of the name change?
Hi, Joe. How are you? I'm totally blind. I've been totally blind from birth. So I have no sight. So Sight Ireland doesn't represent me. And I understand that there are people out there who are visually impaired and people out there who are suffering from sight loss, and I understand that sight loss is very different to being blind from birth. But Sight Ireland, to me, is the opposite to having no sight. And I have no sight.
And do you feel... How does it make you feel, Karen, then? You feel upset, obviously.
I feel upset. I suppose I feel the organisation doesn't represent me anymore. I spoke to somebody from the NCBI yesterday, and they said it's because they're not getting enough referrals from ophthalmologists and eye doctors, consultants, because blind is in the name. And I suppose, you know, I understand that, and I understand that somebody who is suffering from sight loss or, you know, suffering from retinal diabetes, that it can be very upsetting for them. But I suppose I'm blind. I own my blindness. I've been blind from birth. I'm 45. I've always held down a full-time job. I'm a member of two gyms here in Carlow. The fitness studio and Energy Fitness Club, which are brilliant. They're such an inclusive gym. I just find that, you know, had it has been Vision Loss Ireland, Low Vision Ireland, it doesn't have to include blind in the name, but I do feel that they're the organisation that are there to represent me.
You know the argument, and you've rehearsed it yourself there. They wanted to take the word blind out, because there's a lot of people who are visually impaired and wouldn't regard themselves as totally blind. And they want to include those people in their remit. But you think going from that to Sight Ireland is wrong?
I do, because as I say, I have no sight.
But you live a very independent life, don't you, Karen, from that description?
Yeah, I do. I have overcome challenges and obstacles. I suppose that's what I strive for. I strive for my independence. I've got my own house. Always held down a full-time job.
When I was going through the NCBI website there a few days ago, they do run incredible courses.
They do. I did a course with them back in 1995 when I finished school. I did an independent living skills course with them. I did it while I was doing my leaving cert, and then went and got a bed sit. It was a stepping stone for me from doing my leaving cert to starting my secretarial course.
Okay, so they are very... But Karen, sorry for such a blunt question, but if they changed their name to Sight Ireland, would you refuse to do a course?
I would feel that the organisation, that I don't belong to that organisation anymore. At the moment, I don't have any ambition to do any courses with them. I'm in full-time employment. I work for the government.
The way new technology is coming along, and they do run, they're brilliant. They do run courses when the new technology comes and tell you about different apps and... But anyway,
I've got my iPhone, and with the iPhone now, there's VoiceOver on it, and that's built into the iPhone, it's an accessory there for us. So any app that comes on stream, then I can use on my iPhone, and it's brilliant. So, I suppose if there was any courses that I needed to do, but in my opinion, they seem to be going away from the totally blind people, and they're more geared towards people who have just lost their sight or who are losing their sight. That's the impression I got from them.
Okay. Did you get any contact from NCBI about the name?
We weren't surveyed. We weren't advised that
because
the name
we had some great suggestions the other day about Ryark and Outlook and Horizon yeah. and Vision. Anyway, there were some.
Yeah, and Vision,
some fine names,
Vision
yeah.
Loss Ireland, Low Vision Ireland. You know, I don't have a problem with that, but I do feel that Sight Ireland is the opposite to me. I don't have sight.
Okay, okay. Karen, thanks indeed. That's Karen Keeley in Carlow. I'll give people a little warning about the item after the break. It's about, oh, I hate this, RATS.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And tread softly because you tread on my tummy. A rat. Where's Anne? Hello, Anne? Want to read it, Anne's call? I have trouble with rats, which are obviously coming from another house. One house is very dirty and left stuff in the garden. Are you there, Anne?
Hello.
Hello.
Joe, how are you?
The line sounds dreadful to start with. Let's have a go anyway. Let's hope the rats aren't eating through your wires. What's happened?
Well, I was in hospital. I had my hip done. And when I came out, I always leave, you know, during the day, I'd leave small little dish down for my dog. I have a small little dog and... I heard this tune and I looked over and I said, Jesus, that's Henry, my dog.
Okay, and we can't proceed with that line. I know when I was off there for a few weeks, I used to listen a lot to radio and I got a picture of how frustrating it is for listeners when the lines are difficult. And we'll try and improve them after this break.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Mary is on the line. We'll come back to our other caller in a sec. Mary, Stephanie at the start of the programme, at her wit's end, her daughter Rachel, 23, Down syndrome originally, but has deteriorated after, not necessarily sequentially but as a consequence, but she's deteriorated she's non-verbal, her head is stooped all the time. Advice, Mary, if possible.
Yes, well, I was listening to it, Joe, and I was involved in that area many years ago. You know, I was involved in rehabilitation and special needs. Mm. And with specifically people with Down syndrome, you know, there is a certain propensity to say depression and Alzheimer's and that type of thing. But in this case, you know, when I was listening to that woman, Rachel, was it?
Yeah, Stephanie was the mom.
Stephanie was the mom.
Yeah, and Rachel is the 23-year-old woman, yeah.
Yes, yes. And I just felt I had that experience with one of my clients. Now, it's a number of years ago, and we don't know why the young girl, she was, again, in her 20s, and she just went into a massive depression. It could have been anything that happened in the house. And, you see, because of the way of maybe expressing themselves differently, it's hard to pinpoint what's going on, you know, because the communication is a little bit different. And this woman that I was working with, she just took to the bed, and it was like she had been very lively, like Rachel. Now, she had been very lively, very able. Now, she wasn't maybe as what I understood to be as verbal and as communicative as Rachel. But what we did was we just motivated her with things that she felt safe with. You know, and when I was listening to Stephanie there, I just thought, it's quite likely that terrible trauma, the rape has had an impact on the young woman. And, you know, I just thought when I heard her say she was climbing up the stairs, you know, kind of all fours and putting the head down to the chest, it seems she's reverting back to her young safety space, you know, and it's all about keeping me safe, and I'm not safe anymore. And I was safe in this space when I was young, you know, and looking for someone to kind of convince her, I suppose, that she's safe again. So what we, I remember did before was we talked about all the things that would motivate the young woman. And she loved to dance. She loved dressing up.
Okay.
So we asked the the family to, you know, every morning to bring in different fancy dresses and different pictures of things that we would be doing in the day, you know, like dancing and that type of thing. And eventually, now it took a while, and it was very distressing because this was a girl that was so lively, and all of a sudden she didn't want to engage with anyone. But it did work. And eventually, one day she saw this particular dress and she put it on and she came in, and we just went from there. You know, we did lots of
So that's you are a rehabilitation psychologist. That's what you work in. Okay. So you're saying to Stephanie and Rachel, there is hope.
Oh, absolutely.
You've seen this before.
I would think, I mean, I really feel she should be treated as any young woman who has had that kind of a trauma to their body, to their safety. I mean, rape is just such an angry, vicious, you know, attack. And because the person with Down syndrome has maybe a limited understanding of the concept of that, that she should be treated with counselling, but by someone who understands intellectual disability, by someone who understands counselling. So lots of trying to get the communication from the young woman, get her to talk about, now that could be talk about, it doesn't have to be verbal, it can be visual, it can be artistically, it can be through, you know, dance or emotion or just being there with her, you know. But I would say to her mom, don't lose hope, you know, because I was very young when this happened. I was a very new psychologist when this happened, and I didn't really know what to do. So we just we played it by ear, and it worked. And over the years, obviously, I've become more knowledgeable about the condition and counselling, and it really is to try to find the key that will unlock the communication door. Now, again, like I said, communication doesn't have to be always just verbal. It can be just something, a picture they see. It can be a piece of cloth. It can be a smell, a perfume, but just lots of sensory things to get the person to engage with you. And if that young woman can feel a safety again, she will then, hopefully, she will start to express herself. And
it's does the non-verbal, to go from verbalizing to non-verbal, is that common or, sorry, is that, that's not unheard of, that's your point?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. No, it's not. Okay. And that is what I have seen.
Yeah.
It's the first thing that goes. Because person is so overwhelmed. If you think of it, the way we express ourselves is through, you know, ordinarily, we rant and we rave and we laugh and we, you know, kind of express joy. But when that's taken away from us and we're so afraid, we just go back into our babyhood in like a baby doesn't talk, does it? You know, a baby just expresses themselves by action. And you see, that's what that girl is, I think, doing. She's expressing her her trauma with actions. You know, I'm crawling, I'm putting my head back, I'm back into my safety womb space, you know. Now, obviously, I can't, this isn't a, you know, it's very, very broad. And I'm not saying that this happens for everyone because it is a very individual situation. But definitely my experience anyway with people with Down syndrome over the years would be that they need to gently, gently be brought out of themselves to a safe space again, you know. Now with the mom as well, because it's the mom really that needs that support to help her daughter to come to that safe space, you know.
So there is hope. That's the
And
you've come across it before. That's what I want Stephanie that's what I want Stephanie to hear, that she's not alone, that it has happened to other people. And it will be slow, but now, Mary, can Stephanie be reassured that Rachel is not suffering? Do you follow me? Insofar as we know.
No, I would say I would say Stephanie's behaviour is indicating that
Rachel, the daughter, yeah.
Or sorry, yeah, I would say, yeah, no, yeah, no, I would say Rachel's behaviour is indicating that she is in a sad place.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Now you see, like I said, it could be early dementia. It could be early whatever. Mm. But that's not to say, oh, let's just say because someone has Down syndrome, that's what happens to people with Down syndrome.
Okay.
No, because honestly, I have worked with people who are 50, mm-hmm. you know, 50 plus years, and they haven't lost their ability of joy for life and that type of thing. You know, it's very much what you put in is what you're going to get back, you know.
Okay.
And you see, I when I heard the program, I just really felt for the
you're,
mom.
You're brilliant. You're exact. Are you still working in that area, that field, Mary?
Well, funny enough, no. I left it a number of years ago, but I'm working in education now. So
okay.
I teach other people to try and.
I would dearly love, and this is all I'd ask for, and I'm sorry. I would dearly love one phone call between you and Stephanie, just one.
Yes, I would be quite happy.
Oh, yeah, brilliant.
Now, obviously, private, not public.
Yeah, of course. Oh, absolutely, just between the two of you. But just even here am I not in the middle of it, and I was deeply affected by Stephanie's call and her description of Rachel, but here am I not in the middle of it. And I can see an enormous amount of common sense and hope in what you're saying. So, please, God. Anyway, with your permission and with Stephanie's permission, we let you exchange a number for a phone call, and Mary, really appreciate it. Really.
No, not at all. That's fine. I would be delighted to just to give her a bit of, you know, kind of support, I suppose, but confirmation, you know. And
I suspect if she's listening, you already have.
Right.
I suspect you already have.
Yeah.
Because you're a rock of sense and experience.
Are they in Dublin? You see.
I don't know where. I think they might be in Wicklow. I don't know exactly where they are.
Oh, right. Yeah. Because I imagine there has to be services.
Yeah,
there.
Well, you might be able to direct them. Okay, Mary. Gurumila Mahogat, Mary. Mary's a rehabilitation psychologist. What a fantastic profession. Thanks indeed. Joe at rt.ie for your voice notes on WhatsApp. It's 087-1843-709. Paul Murphy. Paul, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
Go ahead. It's what's your contact is about? You have an English phone box.
Yeah, it was just when you were talking about the whether people had the stomach for the royal chocolate.
Yes.
For the Jubilee chocolate. But
People looking for souvenirs, mementos to mark the Queen's 70th year on
Jubilee,
the throne, which,
we
know. In a couple of weeks' time, the UK and indeed parts of the Commonwealth, the UK is going to go into crazy party mode for 4 days and four nights. The pubs are staying open, I think, till 2 o'clock in the morning. There's daily concerts, there's street parties, there's displays, vintage car displays. There's it's to mark the jubilee of the coronation of Queen Elizabeth. As she hits her 96th year. Now, this sparked a debate on Liveline, and one caller said, no shop in their right mind in the Republic would stock this material. And then we had a DUP councillor from Armagh, I think, and he ran a shop, and he offered to supply to a couple of our listeners what they were looking for. But you have... in your garden in Whitehall in Dublin, an English phone box. Why?
I restore old Irish phone boxes. That's actually my business now. I restore them and sell them on to villages and tidy towns and pubs and private houses. But I got a chance of, that's my second English phone box I've restored, actually, the one that's in my garden now. I got a chance of them, and no matter what people say, everyone likes the red phone box. It's an icon, a design icon, and everyone loves it. And people have said to me on both occasions when I was restoring them from my front garden, that's going to get destroyed. It's going to get wrecked. You're not afraid people
going to get vandalised.
Yeah. But not a bit of it. Everyone loves it. Everyone loves it. I never had a bit of trouble, touch wood. And everyone loves the phone boxes. People come in and take photographs with two of them.
Of course,
now, there's an Irish one and an English one beside it. Now, the first one I did, it went down to a pub down in... near Nina. Bally detached pub down there. He put an English one on one side of the road and an Irish one the other, and it was around the time of Begs, and he said, "No Begs are here, come in and have a drink." That's what his message was. But but I think that the message, but I mean, and I think the royal collectibles have always been there, and stuff with the different kings or crowns on them have been collectible. I got a brass bell off a Green Goddess fire engine.
Okay.
And it would have had George V.
And where's the Green Goddess fire engine?
The Green Goddess was the fire engine that was during the Second
World War. Yeah, I know, on the Bedford chassis. Yeah, we had them here. Yeah. We had them here. We had civil defence at them. But where did you have? Where's your Green Goddess now?
Well, I didn't have the Green Goddess. I just had the bell.
Okay.
I picked it up in an antiques fair in England, and it was obviously the George V crown on it that caught my attention.
And by the way, would your phone boxes ever be used in movies or TV or?
I've had plenty of people asking. Nationwide covered one going down to Kildare, one that went to a village in Clare. But people have asked, but they weigh over a ton. The Irish one's concrete, it weighs about 1.2 tonnes.
And they were brilliant size. What do you think of these new pretendy phone boxes? They're basically advertising hoardings. Cluttering up the footpath.
That's what it is, I don't think it's something to do with a phone. It's the fact that they were there.
How did our councils and our corporations allow such an impediment on the footpath?
There you go. The entitlement was there already. That's why you think they got away with it. There was one of the old aluminium
phone boxes. Yeah, but the old
phone
box was about half the width of the new one. And the reason why the new one is so old, it has one of these moving advertising displays in it that changes every... They're money-making things.
Money-making, exactly. It's revenue.
Regard for people with visual impairment, people with buggies. People in wheelchairs
but that's a whole different. But I would say, from a planning point of view and all, they were just taking the footprint of the old phone box.
I think it's a bigger footprint.
Yeah, and I'll definitely go and measure them.
And I think it's much bigger. And I don't know if there was always old phone boxes there, because I know you always need a plan B, so to speak, a press button B.
They were deregulating the phone boxes. I mean, AIR had to have so many phone boxes around
if it had so many
calls for that reason, for safety and all. But let's be honest, if you're stuck, if you're after being attacked, you'll stop someone in the street and say, "Can I use your phone?" You're not going to go looking for a phone box. You're not going to.
Yeah, but what they're thinking of is DEFCON 2, where Putin knocks down all the... Which could happen. Putin knocks down the Wi-Fi and the whole network. And so there'd be a queue at those phone boxes. But I saw great use of the old phone boxes. It was championed by Councillor Anna Granger out in Dundrum, and she got the old phone box and turned it into a housing for a defibrillator.
Community, brilliant. That's been done a lot around the country now.
Brilliant idea, yeah.
I sell two types of the Irish phone box, an original one that I'd have in stock when I can get them. I have one at the moment that came out of Ranla Village that I'm trying to get a new home for. It actually came out and has all the old signage from Ranla.
Yeah.
And I make replicas, exact replicas. You wouldn't know the difference from the replicas, and
on these new monstrosities on the footpath this advertising company, why didn't they put something communal in it? Why didn't they put four shelves in it for people to leave books and take books? Why didn't they put a car charger in it? You know what I mean?
They were discussing putting car chargers.
Well, there's no car. But why did they only put advertising material in it, apart from the phone? Big deal.
Purely revenue, I'd say, revenue-driven. Yeah. And once you put books in them, it's obviously got to be maintained, and someone has to keep it tidy, and someone has to make sure that it's safe, and you're bringing a whole new aspect to it that people don't want to take responsibility. Now, I know in the UK and even throughout Ireland, there are phone boxes that are being used for book lending libraries, and the community take charge of them and keep maintain them and keep them right. And that's the way it should be. But I think
that would happen here as well. I think that people have enormous respect for books. Anyway,
Yeah.
Okay, keep it going, Paul. If you so you have a bell for a green goddess and you're looking for a green goddess to fit the bell.
I don't still have the bell's gone, I sold it on, but it was nice and it had its story, and that's what I know. But the point is, I suppose the royal stuff is collectible, and I have an interest in the royal collectible stuff. I think it's good.
Okay.
I don't know that people are going to want Jubilee chapter now. I don't know if that's really going to have an appetite for it, you know.
But the only reason you'd want Jubilee chocolate if it's dairy milk and it's made in Coolock in Dublin,
Absolutely.
That's the nicest milk chocolate in the world. Yeah, don't care about the wrapping. Okay, good to meet him, Margaret Paul Murphy in Whitehall in North Dublin. And back to you're in Cork, Anne.
That's right, Joe.
And what happened? You were in hospital.
Yeah.
And you came home, and what happened?
I came home and I had a clean-up stand down from my dog, you know, which I do every day for him.
Mm-hmm.
And next thing, I see this thing, and it was as big as a cat, but I said, that's not a cat. So the next thing I discovered it was a rat, but he'd gone. Don't ask me where he went to.
Oh,
so after that, I rang a friend of mine, a publican, and I asked him to know, you know, the publicans all have, for all kinds of mice and things. Oh, I can't, just can't put the word on it now. And he bought me two boxes to put down for the rats. So the first day, he brought them down, got two huge rats.
Oh, God.
And I got a man to take them out for me.
And do you hear the scratching at the rat? Do you hear, you know when people say, I can hear the scratching at the rats
night time? Yeah.
Oh,
here at night time, when they come in about 8:30,
you're
hearing them around the corridor upstairs.
Oh, God.
And then one day
Anne, would you not be tempted to run out of the house?
Well, what can I do? I haven't got the money to buy another one.
Yeah.
It's desperate. I'm just at my wit's end.
And where are the rats coming from?
They seem to come from the left-hand side of me here and across the roof.
And is there rubbish? Do you mind me asking, is there rubbish around?
No, nothing in my garden anyway. There was in another garden beside me.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Is there building work going on that might disturb
the
rats?
No, there was. Back about 3 or 4 months ago, there was a bit of building work going on, but that's finished.
Yeah. And have rent a kill or whatever, have they called you?
I have been here for the last 4 weeks.
And they're a brilliant company. How are they getting on?
Not a thing caught them.
Not a what, sorry?
Not a thing caught them, not a rat caught them.
But they're smart, ones. Rats are wily.
Yeah. And I think there are two boxes down. There's one here in the kitchen and there's one down the garden.
And what's your safe room in the house, Anne?
Just the bedroom where I'm sleeping in.
And if you anyone that might stay at night time?
Well, what are they going to do? Run out of the place?
Because you're very resilient.
Yeah. No, I rang the council.
This is awful. This is awful.
Yeah, I know, Joe. I'm at my wit's end.
Oh,
yeah, I rang the county council. They told me down to Cork County Council. Cork County Council told me down to the environment. They sent me back to Cork County Council. I was on to the health board. Everyone I see in the book for dealing with pests, I rang a lot of them. I lost him. I rang every one of them. A lot of them came out and they put down poison.
Okay, your line is still dreadful, Anne, but I don't want your address, obviously, but are you in Cork City?
No, 25 miles from Cork City.
And are you in a house, is it a house on its own, or are you in a little town or a village?
It's a town, and there's two houses, one each side of it. One is this, and one is
I'm trying to think, is there anyone... We'll get on to Rent-A-Kill again, because they are a brilliant company, and they...
Yeah.
Do they know... I presume they do.
Yeah,
But they know how fearful you are and upset you are.
I know. I don't think they do.
Okay, well, hopefully they know by the end of this, Anne.
Sorry?
Hopefully they will by the end of this call.
Please.
That you're at your wit's end. You're 25. How many miles are you from
Cork
City?
25 miles from Cork City.
And is there anyone?
Sorry.
I'm just trying to think. We'll get on to Rentokil and ask them to listen to your pleas. As I say, they are a great company, and I'm sure. But there are more frightening things. But for many people, the idea of a rat and a few rats and the noise of the rats in your house, you can hear them in your house.
I can, of course,
From 8:30 at night.
Yes.
Oh, good
God. These mornings I go down, but I check all the venting. And the boxes are both myself to see if there's anything in them, I can see into them.
Your line isn't doing you any favours.
I know the table is being walked, and I know the sink and all around there is all has been walked on.
Yeah. Oh, you poor thing.
Yeah.
Now a lot of the issue with rats is the issue with rats is psychological. You know that they aren't inherently dangerous. Yeah. They won't attack you. Now the only thing is golfers and Wiles disease or whatever from rats urine. But in the main, they're not dangerous. They're just awful to look at, aren't they? And to think about. We've been brought up. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, Anna, and will you leave it with us? And with your permission, we'll ring Rentokil as well and remind them of your address, even though they are doing their best, aren't they?
Oh, definitely. Okay. Only the last time
okay, but I just want them to be more aware of how an awful situation you're in. Okay, yeah. Anne, mind yourself. Mind yourself, Anne. Okay. Anne Stewart. Anne, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
For the uses for the old phone boxes.
Yes. My son's friend had his old one. It was just dumped, and he asked him, could he have it? Because he had done a little, bar for his friend during the, it's up there for a long time now. So he got his, any damage or anything that was done to the phone box, he got it actually converted into a little outdoor loo. So you just have your... You just have your toilet pot and a lovely little tiny small hand sink right over it. It's absolutely lovely. So it's now remember,
but remember those phone boxes, Anne, back in the day were often used as a loo, except they weren't plumbed.
Yeah, well, this is plumbed, and you could just you can go into it, you can sit in it, you can whatever, and the door will close, and then outside you go. It's lovely now, but it's just, when I heard you talking about the phone boxes they're used.
and do you mind me, Anna, have you used it?
Yes, we have.
Very good. And the windows are frosted.
Oh, yes.
And
yes,
you don't have to press button A and press button B.
No way, no way. You just press your button to flush it away. And
the main thing is when you come out, you're not ringing.
No.
And neither is a phone box. Okay, great idea. By the way, where is this little private pub, please?
It's not a private pub. It's just his own little thing. We're right under the little sugar loaf.
Good lad.
Under the little sugar loaf.
Good lad.
All right.
Okay.
Okay, Joe, thank you.
See you later. Well done, Anne. Colleen, advice for Stephanie.
Oh, yes. Sorry about this, Joe. I do animal rescue now, but I'm a retired social worker. There have been incidences in the UK which have been quite horrific when I've arrived to cover a shift in residential care, for example, where I would call on young people, especially, but sometimes they have called them intellectually challenging nowadays. But what I've found, Joe, is unfortunately for a lot of our professionals, is they don't recognise a situation when a young person has been abused. And in fact, on this occasion, even what we called the key worker when I walked in hadn't even noticed there was a difference in this young person at all. And I went to the young person's bedroom where she was sitting there, very much as described by your lady who has the distressful situation.
Stephanie with her daughter, Rachel.
Stephanie, yeah. And it just reminded me of how, unfortunately, professionals don't actually, how can I put this, connect to people and young people, and particularly young people with special needs. And what I have found is that I used to take, as an example, I used to take my big rescue German Shepherd in with me on occasions to some of the children's homes. And the children and young people who were special would immediately connect to the animal more so than they would us, because animals are not they're not judgmental. And they would connect in a way that, you know, the cuddling and our girl, she was just a very, very big gentle giant, to be honest with you. But on this occasion, as I say, this is very much a similar situation as what was described.
But the main, but Colleen, what I'm hearing from you is that you would be would you be willing to have a chat with Stephanie?
Because, oh, absolutely. Yeah, okay, I mean, because, I'll be honest with you, Joe, I didn't expect a call back from yourself.
Yeah, no, she's at her wit's end.
I heard that.
And you are, I know you're retired, but that means you're a retired social worker. That means you have great experience.
I have I always go out of my way, and I always have done. I mean, even when I was off duty, I went into a situation. Well then, I'd be more than happy.
Well, then, with your permission, because there's a few good ideas there already, Colleen. With your permission, we'll patch you to Stephanie and vice
versa. Absolutely, please.
Indeed, Colleen. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Where is Dermot O'Toole? Dermot, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You're in Carlow at the minute. You're installing electric vehicle points. Where?
Well, I'll tell you, Joe. Our company is EasyGo, started by a businessman here in Kildare. We have done a partnership with Ayr as to replace telephone kiosks. As per your suggestion, Joe, it's from your playbook. Per your suggestion to replace telephone kiosks with fast chargers. And the pioneering county on that has been Carlow. So we've launched them today in Carlow.
Okay.
And that's those facilities.
And who do you work for, Dermot?
Our company is EasyGo, Joe. EasyGo. We're based in Maynooth, Irish-owned company, and we have the largest network of EV chargers, Joe, in Ireland.
Well done.
And we're working to build more and more of them. So I think you're dead right. I think libraries, book swaps, defibrillators.
Yeah. Community stuff,
Lots of uses, but our contribution will be a network of fast chargers for all of those.
That's easy go. Well done. Trevor Hayden, listening to Anne there with her. Thanks, Anne, about her problem with the rats. Are you in Cork? Are you near Cork, Trevor?
Yeah, I tell you, we're a nationwide company, so we have technicians based in Cork, and we'd be only too happy to help out.
And you heard her distress.
Yeah.
Trevor. Okay. Good. Well done. Complete pest control. And can you do you poison rats or get rid of them? How do you get rid of them?
No. So internally, the problem with poisoning rats is you've no control over where they die. And chances are you're going to end up really bad. So it's horrible. It's really, really horrible. So we use various different types of traps.
Okay.
To be honest, the rat's not really the problem. It's the fact that the rats are getting in is the problem.
Yeah.
And that's
what
we need to figure out. So.
That's good thinking, reframe it. Thanks indeed. That's Trevor Hayden, Complete Pest Control. Letitia Hill. Letitia was on at the start of the programme yesterday. She gave her wedding dress away, or she lost her wedding dress. What's the news?
I found the dress, Joe. The dress was sent to me. It was found in Dublin. It was a later train, and the cleaner that was cleaning the train had nowhere to bring it because the office was closed, supervisor was gone, so they couldn't log it on the system. And so, of course, when we were heard on the radio yesterday, from what I know, the staff gathered, you know, rallied around and pulled all stops out and found the dress. It was actually put in a safe place, but it was finding where that safe place was, you know. And I'm fair play to them. Then Niall Davis, very, very helpful guy. He kept ringing me throughout the day, reassuring me that they had it and they were going to put her on the train. He'd ring me once I was on the train, which he did.
And well
so
done
they put
to
on a 5 o'clock train, and I got her 7:30 last night. So
Well done to Ian Roder, and well done to our callers. Well done to Etna, who, by the way, we managed to cancel the second dress. So I won't have to wear it. This is the song, Letitia, I want you to play at the wedding on this day fortnight.
Well, you're all welcome.
want to come out and mark up your wife's restaurant
to be blown. Be afraid, be afraid, be very afraid. This is Eileen Reid. Listen to this. Liveline found it. Back tomorrow, 1:45. Brenda Dunhill produced.
715-815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.